Hello again, everybody. On this edition of If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right with me, Doug Hagan, we're going to be talking about the fast approaching elections of 2010, which are going to drastically impact Obamanomics, the Obama campaign against America, the liberal freight train that is destroying this country economically and in other ways. And I'm going to have some fewer than nuggets. I'm going to have a musical interlude. This is a longer version of If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. And following that musical interlude, I'm going to have a very, very, very special treat. Some words of wisdom from one of the wisest men in my lifetime. Get ready, because it starts right now, my friends. This is Doug Hagan. You are listening to If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right, right here on Chimpsy Radio. Remember our Facebook page. Remember, you can go to our Facebook page, find out what all the hosts are going to be yakking about, find out what's coming up, and go to Chimpsy Radio and have a dialogue with us. Comment with us during our shows. We're online. We're listening. The hosts are all usually there. A lot of us are anyway. During all the shows, we savor your input. We really do. Because without you, there would be no us. Our priorities at Chimpsy Radio are very clear. And there's a lot to get to this week. This is going to be longer than usual. I'm going to be doing this show for longer periods of time now. I've been moving further and further to the north side of 30 minutes anyway, so... David Cholesterol and myself discussed it, and I'm going to try to yak at you longer and longer here and see if I can do more to further the cause of conservatism and cure the malady of liberalism that is infecting so many in this country, so many unfortunate victims of liberalism and liberal think. They need help, and I'm the doctor with the serum of truth and common sense that they need. Now, a lot of this show is going to be dedicated to the election coming up, obviously. That's the big news. But a little bit of news of, well, someone who won my Marxist Moron of the Ward yesterday on my blog, The Daily Gator, dailygator@wordpress.com. I host that with Edward Daly, whose work you all know from Chimpsy Radio. And... the newest member of the Supreme Court, one Elena Kagan, who is such a brilliant mind, according to the left, and such a champion of the little man, and wants to play the empathy card in making court decisions, judicial decisions. On the Bluegrass Pundit blog, this is a headline: "So, Supreme Court of the United States newest liberal." That would be Elena Kagan, votes to stop execution because, can you fill in the blank? Why would she vote to stop an execution? There's a reason, and you're not going to believe the reason. Such genius from this woman. And as is written on the blog, you just can't make this stuff up. President Obama's latest Supreme Court appointment, Elena Kagan, votes in dissent with liberals to stop an execution because the drugs used may be unsafe. That's right. These drugs that are going to kill this convicted killer, kill a murderer, may be unsafe for him or her. Hold on one second. Excuse me. I don't know if you heard that. I had to pound my forehead with my hand several times just to get my brain restarted, because my brain was freezing up from the absolute stupidity of such a vote. Oh, good God, woman. Are you serious? I wonder if this woman drives herself. I wonder if she brushes her teeth without adult supervision. I don't think that's a good idea, Miss Kagan. You're going to execute someone. That means kill them in their life. Why in the hell would you even consider whether the drug is unsafe or not? You're going to kill them. It's like telling I don't know what it's like. It's like going out in a lightning storm and holding up a metal rod and standing barefoot on concrete in water up to your knees. That's what it's like. That's such stupidity. And this is a liberal genius. A genius. I mean, she's such an astute political mind. We just had to have her on the Supreme Court. That was Obama's number one draft pick for the Supreme Court. A woman so incredibly freaking stupid that she would vote to stay in execution because the drugs that will kill the person to be executed, would that be called the executee, would kill this person, might be unsafe. What, they might give him a rash? They might break him out in hives? It might make his eyes water? It might what? Might make it, give him a temperature or something? You're going to kill him, for God's sake. Where do these people come from? But there's more stupidity. God, so much stupidity in the world in so little time. Iran. We all know Iran. This is a country that, let's just say in the list of nations that are that embrace women's rights, women's equality, Iran isn't really high on the list. Iran is very anti-woman. Women don't have rights in Iran. They have morality police squads that go around. If a woman is not dressed properly, she can be arrested, beaten, lashed, whatever. This is a country that still stones people, hangs women for doing things like, talking to men that aren't their husbands. It's an evil, back-assward regime that doesn't respect women's rights, doesn't respect women as anywhere near an equal person to a man. But yet, the UN, which is even more deeply entrenched in the pit of eternal stupidity than is Elena Kagan, is likely to make Iran a member of a new United Nations Women Agency board. Now, this new agency, it's from the Jerusalem Post, by the way, the new agency is meant to promote equality. Equality. Iran recently sentenced a woman to death for adultery, but the United Nations is going to let Iran on a board to promote women's equality. Does that mean Iran's now going to start executing men for adultery? That would be how they achieve equality? Oh, and by the way, Saudi Arabia, also not a bastion of women's rights, also a candidate to be on. Here's more. Iran, where a woman convicted of adultery has been sentenced to death by stoning, is likely to become a member of the board of the new UN agency to promote equality for women, prompting outrage from the United States and human rights groups. Some rights groups are also upset that Saudi Arabia, where women are not allowed to drive and are barred from many facilities, used by men, is also vying to join the governing body of UN Women. The General Assembly resolution adopted in July that merged four UN bodies dealing with women's issues into a single agency with greater clout to represent half the world's population calls for a 41-member executive board, with 35 members chosen by regional groups and six representing donor nations. Iran, Saudi Arabia. Two of the worst abusers of women in the world. Two regimes that have absolutely no regard for the rights of women. Why would the UN... How could the UN be so stupid? Please, someone explain this to me. It's giving me a headache. It literally is making my brain spasm right now. This is just pathetic. How stupid do you have to be? How stupid does the General Assembly of the United Nations need to have to be? I mean, we know the United Nations is a bevy of stupidity. The United Nations generally makes about as much sense as a screen door in a submarine. They're usually as efficient as a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. We understand that about the United Nations. But good Lord. Iran and Saudi Arabia. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. We're going to... Again, we're members of the United Nations. We pump a lot of money into the useless nations, as I call them. Why doesn't the United States just say, you know what, UN, go to hell. Get out of New York. Get out of us. We'll get out of you. Get out. We'll handle our affairs. We don't need you. Being it's like many stupid things America does, like not taking advantage of its own energy sources. You know, we just do stupid things in America sometimes, and belonging to the UN is one of the stupidest things we've ever done. But there's politics to talk about, folks. The election is right around the corner. Next Tuesday, there will be many Democrats that will go from the title of representative or senator to the title of unemployed, private citizen, average Joe. It'll be a good thing for America. A Real Clear Politics has a poll out that predicts the seat change in the House, a net pickup of 62 seats for the Republicans. And I want to give a word of warning to the Republicans. The leadership of the Republican Party, which, while not as stupid as the United Nations or Elena Kagan, sometimes makes me want to slap myself on the forehead, too, from their acts of stupidity. If the GOP picks up 62 seats in the House, maybe we'll even take back the Senate. If these things happen, the reason they happened will be the American people have spoken. They want us to do what they voted for us to do. It won't be the time to turn into Lindsey Graham and want to reach out to the president. We want to work with him. No. It will be a time to tell the president, hey, buddy, it's time to work with us. It's time to stop this socialist express you've got crushing this nation. It's time to come to terms with the reality and start doing things that are good for the country and good for the American people instead of bad for the American people. It's time to stop the socialism and move back towards the founding principles of this country. Lindsey Graham is one of these Republicans, rhinos, that just, oh, good Lord. He just seems to be infected with his bipartisanship bug. He's just, let's reach out. Let's reach across the aisle. I mean, you know, Lindsey Graham's like the Lindsay Lohan of the Republican Party. If he was hotter and, well, did drugs a lot and was in jail, he would be Lindsay Lohan, but he's just pretty much useless to the Republican Party so often. The Republican leadership has to ignore the Lindsey Grahams of the party and look at the new blood that's coming in. The Marco Rubios, maybe Sharon Engel, maybe Christine O'Donnell. She's within 5 points in Delaware, according to a new poll. You have to understand, folks. You have to understand. The Republican leadership has to follow through. That's one thing the Republicans did wrong after the 94 midterms. They got in there and then they said, well, let's get along. Let's be liked by the media. Let's be bipartisan. Let's reach out. No, to hell with that. The Democrats have to reach out to us. Okay? We're going to clean their clocks and kick their ass in this election. Let them reach the hell out to us. It's not the time to be congenial. It's the time to say, we won, you lost, elections have consequences, by God. Now, shut up, quit your whining, and you work with us to better America. That's it. That should be the message to Democrats. I am tired of these, oh, let's get along. Can we please get along? Can we please be nice? And no, 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 to hell with that. Shut up, Lindsey Graham, and shut up every other Republican that starts this business of reaching out to the president. Excuse me, if the election goes as I think it's going to go, the American people do not want that. When someone hires you to do a job, and let's face it, when the American people vote for Republicans with these massive gains, they're hiring us to do a job. They're hiring the GOP candidates to do a job. What do you do when someone pays you to do a job? You run a business. What do? You do the job. You don't say, well, now that I've got your money, I really think I'd better do it this way or that way. No, 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 no. You do the job you're paid to do. In this case, the Republicans have to do the job they're going to be elected to do. No more Mr. Nice Guy, no more Mrs. Nice Guy, Nice Lady. Kick their ass in the election and hold them to it. And we, the voters, the electorate, have to hold them and their feet to the fire. We have to insist the GOP follow through. And while I'm talking about the electorate, the American people, the voters, I told you a couple weeks ago that John Kerry had made some disparaging remarks about voters, that they weren't very informed, and, you know, they just kind of vote for who knows why they vote for. But Bill Maher, who I posted about on my blog recently, I do that quite often. Bill Maher is an easy target. Bill Maher is the really stupid guy who thinks he's really smart and goes around at a party with a martini. Actually, for him, that pussy like him, it'd probably be Chardonnay or Pinot Grigio or something. And he flaunts himself and says, oh, I'm so nuanced. I'm so smart. Listen to what I think because I'm smarter than everybody. What a douchebag Bill Maher is. God, I don't think I could be in the same room without slapping his head and spinning around his scrawny little shoulders. Little sorry excuse, not even funny. Some comedian that can't make people laugh. I thought Whoopi Goldberg wasn't funny. I thought Bobcat Goldthwait wasn't funny. I thought Steve Carell wasn't funny, but this guy takes the cake. He takes the non-funny cake bakery. But here's Bill Maher on the George Lopez show, which won't be on the air for long. It's on TBS, by the way. I believe it's going to be moved back to midnight to follow Conan O'Brien's new show. I like Conan O'Brien, by the way. Funnier than Letterman, funnier than Leno. Who is funnier than Letterman? But Conan O'Brien's a pretty good guy, seems like. Funny guy, entertaining. Like Leno, I like him. Letterman's just kind of an old pervert, I think. Kind of not even relevant anymore. But Bill Maher is on George Lopez's show, which probably has a viewership about equal to MSNBC. Excuse me, MSNBS, I'm sorry. We want to call the network what it should be called. But Bill Maher is talking to George Lopez, who used to be funny on the George Lopez show. Anybody ever watch that? Had his wife was, what, Constance Marie? Gorgeous lady. A funny show, and a lot of good values espoused. It was just a funny show to watch, very entertaining. But George Lopez, like a lot of liberals, once they get in kind of in the spotlight, get their own show, they think they have to say certain things and, you know, bash Republicans. But Bill Maher said some interesting things, and he said this type of stuff before. Bill Maher says, when asked about how Obama's doing, says he would give him an A, because he was handed such a crappy hand to play with by the evil George W. Bush, of course. But Bill Maher says the Democratic Party exists. I'm paraphrasing here. I was going to play the clip, but I can't get it to sound right on this. I haven't mastered the art of doing that yet here. But he says that the Democratic Party exists to drag the hillbilly half of America into the next century. And for the hillbilly half, apparently, according to Bill Maher, it's the 19th century they have to be drug into. So in other words, if you're a Tea Party, you're a Republican, you're a conservative, you're a real libertarian, not a fake libertarian like Bill Maher is, but a real libertarian, you're stuck in the 1700s, basically. You know, we have to be drug into modern times because we're so stupid. He doesn't stop there, though. Then he attacks the entire American electorate. It says that basically, we're too stupid to understand issues. We're like a dog. We can understand inflection. We can understand, dominance. We can understand maybe fear. But we're too stupid to tackle and handle and grasp and understand issues. Again, the guy at the party with the Pinot Grigio, who looks like he took 30 minutes getting ready so he could look so proper, who thinks he's just all of that? He's so cool, he's so hip, he's so funny, he's so smart. The guy that everyone laughs at behind his back. The guy that got beat up in school by everybody, including the janitor and the girls. That guy. That's who Bill Maher grew up from. That's the kid you knew in school that you wanted to punch in the face every time he opened his mouth because he never shut up telling you how smart he was. He grew up to be Bill Maher. And somehow he's had his own show now on, ABC and Comedy Central before that, and now HBO. Here's a guy who defends European socialism as a great success story when Europe is in much worse state, in much worse a place than we are economically in America. And here's the genius Bill Maher who wants to take us down the road of European socialism because America's not bad off enough with debt and unemployment, et cetera, and entitlement programs. We need more. You see, Bill Maher is dedicated. He's a guy who buys lock, stock, and barrel into Al Gore's BS, global warming, climate change scam. But yet, he's the smartest guy in the room. And it always amazes me, the people like Bill Maher. He just makes your skin crawl. And he's pathetic. He is truly the most dangerous people in the world, it has been said, are the really stupid people who think they're smart. And they try to lord it over you like they're smarter than you. I've had discussions at parties and things like that with people like that, and it's just, you shake your head. And I end up laughing at them because they're just so pathetic. That's what Bill Maher is. He says these things, and he's got his little moon bat audience from a studio show on HBO called Real Time that they eat that stuff up. And generally, he surrounds himself with a bunch of liberals, maybe a token conservative or Republican or two that really doesn't do a good job of acquitting acquitting themselves. But he did have Andrew Breitbart on recently, and Breitbart asked Bill Maher if he was ready just to drop the phony libertarian title and just admit he's a socialist. And that's when Bill Maher defended European socialism. It really pathetic to watch. And that people take this guy seriously is even more ridiculous. Oh, there's more, though, my friends. How about let's go to my native state, my home state of Florida? How about we go and look at a guy named Charlie Crist, who's the governor right now of Florida. He was a Republican until it became politically inconvenient for him to be Republican, and now he's changed to independent. Charlie Crist is an asshole, but he's an independent politically. He's an asshole in every other way. Charlie Crist is the epitome of what America is sick of. He is the epitome of the sleazeball politician who will take any position, say anything, do anything, stand for anything, sit for anything, bend over for anything, as long as it will get him a vote or two. He's a guy that loves his power more than he loves the idea that you should take into politics, and that's to serve your country, serve your community, serve your constituents. Charlie Crist is about Charlie Crist. Period. Charlie Crist was the governor of Florida. He was running for Mel Martinez's old seat in the Senate. National Republican Senatorial Committee got behind him. He's going to win. He's got the gravitas. He's, we got to have this seat. We have to keep this seat because Mel Martinez is a Republican. Excuse me one second. Had to take a drink. Diet Coke. I do not drink alcohol while doing this show. That would be irresponsible. And I'm not irresponsible. Now, Charlie Crist, running for the seat, the National Republican Senatorial Committee gets behind him. He's the guy. And there was a young man named Marco Rubio who wanted the seat. And a lot of people in Florida liked him a lot. And they wanted wanted to have a chance to support Rubio and get to the Republican primary for that Senate seat. But the NRSC, led by John Cornyn, really wanted Rubio to step aside. You're too young. Wait your turn. We'll let Charlie Crist carry the ball because he's the guy that's gonna get in the end zone. He's gonna score for us. He's gonna get the touchdown for us. Well, the voters of Florida, the Republicans of Florida, didn't listen. Marco Rubio didn't listen, and his conservatism, his speeches, his campaign, his message, began to outdo Crist's message and ideals. And it became clearer and clearer that Charlie Crist was not really a conservative, and Marco Rubio was. And as time went on, the polls changed, and now Rubio is the odds-on favorite to win that. He won the Republican primary. But what did Charlie Crist do when the people of Florida, the Republican voters of Florida, he's a Republican at the time, he dedicated the party, party's behind him, he's the guy who's going to do it for us, he's one of our leaders. What did this sorry sack of trash do as soon as he recognized that the voters, the Republican voters of Florida, were going to support Rubio and not him? Did he say, you know what, by golly, Rubio's a good guy. Everybody who's supporting me, go support and campaign for Marco Rubio. He's got my full support. No, he left the Republican Party and entered the race as an independent. Now, Frederick Meeks is a Democrat in the race. He's polling, I think, at 20%. Crist at 32% and Rubio at 43%, last poll I looked at. But instead of Charlie Crist being a good Republican, he exposed himself for what he was. Just what I said earlier, he's just your typical sleazeball politician. Vote for me and I'll say anything. I'll do anything. I'll stand for anything. I'll sit for anything. Just vote for me. Just keep me in power. His lust for power is greater than his sense of responsibility to his party or to his constituents or to the voters, Republican voters of Florida. He should have been a man about it and said, you know what, Marco Rubio's the nominee. It's clear the people are speaking. They've spoken. I step aside, and I'll support Marco Rubio. Instead, he's doing his best to sabotage Republican chances, because him entering the race is only going to take votes from Rubio. And now he's making these speeches saying that Sarah Palin and Marco Rubio and the Tea Party are extremists. He's even going, this is how far this sleazeball going, this is how far left he's gone. Everything on his campaign website that was pro-life and pro-this, all changed. He's now talking about Roe versus Wade being overturned as some extreme goal that those evil Tea Partiers have, and Sarah Palin and Marco Rubio were extremists. He's even going to appear on the Keith Olbermann show. Keith Olbermann. Keith Olbermann has no credibility. The guy is just a Bill O'Reilly wannabe. Why anybody want to be like Bill O'Reilly, I don't know. But he wants to be the Bill O'Reilly of the left and bloviate and be popular and all that. And he's a radical leftist, there's no doubt. And so Charlie Crist is going to the Keith Olbermann show. That's how far left this guy really is. Or maybe he isn't. Maybe he just thinks this is how he can possibly steal an election away and stay in power. That's all Charlie Crist wants. That's what the American people are so dissatisfied with. Politicians who care nothing about the people, the Constitution, their state constitution, the federal constitution, they care nothing about that. They care about staying in power. They care about keeping their bread buttered, and by God, everyone else, the hell with you. That's all they care about. The Charlie Crist of the world, that is what the American people, maybe more than anything else, are fed up with. And he can call Sarah Palin an extremist. He can call Marco Rubio an extremist. He can call Tea Partiers extremists. He can call people like me and the people listening extremists because we dare to believe that, maybe human life is special. Maybe it should be protected. We believe in the Second Amendment. We believe in fiscal responsibility. He can do all those things if he wants to. But he's going to lose. He's going to lose badly. Rubio's going to win that Senate seat. And it's a good thing. I'm looking so forward to Charlie Crist and Alan Grayson and a lot of the other more despicable ones. Maybe even Harry Reid will be gone. Wouldn't that be great if Sharon Engel booted him in Nevada? By the way, Harry Reid's son rang for governor of Nevada, down by 18 points. Won't even mention his father's name in his campaign ads. That's how popular Harry Reid is right now. Now, folks, I want to take a small break, catch my breath, enjoy a little Diet Coke here, and I want to give you one of my favorite all-time songs. Check this out. Great version of While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Enjoy. I will be back.
Sleeping while my guitar gently weeps.
Thank you. Excellent song. Greatest version of one of the greatest songs in rock history. Jeff Healey did great versions of it. George Harrison, obviously. Eric Clapton. Greatest guitar player in history of mankind, in my opinion. When God wanted a guitar player, he created Eric Clapton. And that's Clapton playing. That's from the Concert for George. Paul McCartney's in it. Jeff Lynne of ELO. Just an all-star cast after George Harrison passed away. Some years ago, they put on a concert for him. And there is no greater rock song for people who love the guitar. I mean, there's Little Wing and some others. But that one, to me, has always been kind of the measuring stick, and Clapton does it better than anybody. Now, back to the election. Back to the approaching butt-whipping the Democrats are going to get. My blogging role model, the lovely and talented Michelle Malkin, on her blog, addresses something that Mike Honda said in this, supposedly, according to the left, as Michelle puts it, post-racial America. Michelle writes, on the heels of California Democrat Representative Loretta Sanchez screeching about the Vietnamese, and GOP challenger Van Tran trying to take away her seat in the year's most embarrassing ethnic card implosion, you would think other California minority politicians would forsake such poisonous identity politics. But no. Here's California Democrat Representative Mike Honda arguing that, and listen closely, folks, Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, which Malkin, who is, by the way, of Filipino descent, calls one of the most absurd, artificial racial ethnic constructs of our government bean-counting bureaucracy, will vote Democrat because the party's commitment to diversity, open borders, and big government. In other words, if you're Asian American, if you're that type of hyphenated American, you better damn well vote Democrat. You better damn well be a liberal, or you're not really Asian. See how it is? You gotta stay on the plantation of liberal ideology if you're a minority. You've gotta know your place, or Democrats will scold you and call you names and challenge the legitimacy of your ethnicity. Isn't it interesting? Isn't it fascinating? And by the way, the Loretta Sanchez, who hopefully will be beaten by Van Tran, made some very disparaging remarks about, because he's Vietnamese. And again, tried to make the case that this was a Latino seat. This was Mexican territory. The damn Vietnamese were trying to come in and take away what was rightfully Mexico's or something. This absolutely racist demagoguery that should be condemned. But back to this idiot Mike Honda. Some of his quote: I am proud that the Democratic Party is the party for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. See, you don't have a choice. You're Asian. You gotta be a Democrat. Mike Honda tells you so. The support that Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have shown to the party is by no accident. The Democratic Party is one that invests in voter outreach in our communities. That is the breeding ground for AAPI, rising political stars. That's Asian American Pacific Islanders, by the way. Again, more identity politics, more the color of your skin determines how you should vote. And that addresses our community's concerns in national policy debates. The Democratic Party is the party of inclusion, and you better be included if you're Asian American or Pacific Islander, or we'll demonize you. So be included in the inclusion, or else. Together, we ensure that all voices are heard in our government, including those of our most vulnerable populations. This commitment is not missed by the Asian American and Pacific Islander community. After all, they do not serve green tea at the tea parties. In other words, tea partiers are bigots. They hate you if you're Asian. That's why such love for Michelle Malkin. But they hate you if you're Asian, those tea partiers. You should be with us, the wonderful, wonderfully tolerant Democrats who, well, want to tell you how to vote and how to think and how to spend your campaign dollars. Liberal hypocrisy, my friends. Remember on November 2nd, let's hope Mike Honda is taking a hike too. He can go do whatever he wants, and maybe Loretta Sanchez take her with him. I was telling somebody the other day, California has the biggest crop of losers for politics. I mean, Henry Waxman, Nostrosaurus Rex, as I call him, Maxine Waters. Good Lord, the woman is a woman's a walking billboard for birth control. They should put her face on videos and listen to her some of her speeches and tell, you know, people, hey, be careful when you have sex. Use birth control. This could happen to you. This could be your child one day. Who else? Oh, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer. I mean, good Lord. We've given us Gray Davis before. Linda, Mike Honda, Loretta Sanchez. It is embarrassing. California is such a great state, but good Lord, they have some absolute losers as politicians. Maybe the worst in the country. Maybe the absolute bottom of the barrel of political asshattery, if you will. Maybe that is in the state of California. I hope California gets better soon. California, maybe more than any other state, needs to get rid of this stuff. Now, I talked about a special treat. I talked about sharing the words of a man that one of the wisest men I've known in my lifetime, didn't know personally. But Ronald Reagan, one of our great presidents, and a truly a very, very wise man. I didn't say intelligent, didn't say well-educated. I said wise. Wise men can be educated, and wise men can be intelligent. But wisdom is deeper than those others. Wisdom means you really get it. Now, in 1964, he gave a speech called A Time for Choosing. He was campaigning for Barry Goldwater at the time, who did lose to LBJ, who gave us a great society. We're still paying the price for that. But Reagan gave this great speech. It was kind of his coming out speech. It's one of the great speeches of all time. I want to share that with you. To get you in the frame of mind, this is what we need from our candidates. This is a rhetoric we want to hear, and we want to see the rhetoric backed up. Words are great, actions are better. Reagan begins, "I am going to talk of controversial things. I make no apology for this. It's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms intended for us by the Founding Fathers. James Madison said, we base all our experiments on the capacity of mankind for self-government. This idea that government was beholden to the people, that it had no other source of power, is still the newest, most unique idea in all the long history of man's relation to man. This is the issue of this election. Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government, or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them for ourselves, you and I are told we must choose between a left or right. But I suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There is only an up or down. Up to man's age-old dream, the maximum of individual freedom consistent with order, or down to the ant heap of totalitarianism. Regardless of their sincerity, their humanitarian motives, those who would sacrifice freedom for security have embarked on this downward path. Plutarch warned, the real destroyer of the liberties of the people is he who spreads among them bounties, donations, and benefits. The Founding Fathers knew a government can't control the economy without controlling the people. And they knew when a government sets out to do that, it must use force and coercion to achieve its purpose. So we have come to a time for choosing. Public servants say always, with the best of intentions, what greater service could we render if we only had a little more money and a little more power? But the truth is that outside of its legitimate function, government does nothing as well or economically as the private sector. Yet any time you and I question the schemes of the do-gooders, we're denounced as being opposed to their humanitarian goals. It seems impossible to legitimately debate their solutions with the assumption that all of us share the desire to help the less fortunate. They tell us We're always against, never for anything. We are for a provision that destitution should not follow unemployment by reason of old age, and to that end, we have accepted Social Security as a step towards meeting the problem. However, we are against those entrusted with this program when they practice deception regarding its fiscal shortcomings. When they charge it any criticism of the program means that we want to end payments. We are for aiding our allies by sharing our material blessings with nations, which share our fundamental beliefs. But we are against doling out money, government to government, creating bureaucracy, if not socialism, all over the world. We need true tax reform that will at least make a start toward restoring for our children the American dream that wealth is denied to no one, that each individual has a right to fly as high as his strength and ability will take him. But we cannot have such reform while our tax policy is engineered by people who view the tax as a means of achieving change in our social structure. Have we the courage and the will to face up to the immorality and discrimination of the progressive tax and demand a return to a traditional proportionate taxation? Today in our country, the tax collector's share is 37 cents of every dollar earned. Freedom has never been so fragile, so close to slipping from our grasp. Are you willing to spend the time studying the issues, making yourself aware, and then conveying that information to family and friends? Will you resist the temptation to get a government handout for your community? Realize that the doctor's fight against socialized medicine is your fight. We can't socialize the doctors without socializing the patients. Recognize that government invasion of public power is eventually an assault upon your own business. If some among you fear taking a stand because you're afraid of reprisals from customers, clients, or even the government, recognize that you are just feeding the crocodile, hoping he'll eat you last. If all of this seems like a great deal of trouble, think what's at stake. We are faced with the most evil enemy mankind has known in his long climb from the swamps to the stars. There can be no security anywhere in the free world if there is no fiscal and economic stability within the United States. Those who ask us to trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state are architects of a policy of accommodation. They say the world has become too complex for simple answers. They're wrong. There are no easy answers, but there are simple answers. We must have the courage to do what we know is morally right. Winston Churchill said that the destiny of man is not measured by material computation. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we are spirits, not animals. And he said, there is something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We will preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we will sentence them to take the first step into 1,000 years of darkness. If we fail, at least our children and our children's children say of us, we justified our brief moment here. We did all that could be done. My friends, that was given before the 1964 election. It could just as easily be given the night before the 2010 midterm elections. All those things Reagan spoke of, big government, the principles of the founders, our slipping liberty. You know, he spoke of the tax burden being 37 cents on the dollar. It's even more now. Tax day, tax independence day, that day of the year when you stop paying taxes, all your taxes paid it, and all the money you make is August sometime now, well over midway point of the year. Like I said, that speech could be given today with equal relevancy, equal importance. The question is, how will we handle our rendezvous with destiny? What will we leave our children, and eventually their children, and their children? Will it be that 1,000 years of darkness that socialism will bring? Because it will bring, as Reagan said, totalitarianism eventually. The more power you give the government, the more you take from the individuals. And the fewer rights individuals have for the good of the collective, soon not only individuals lose their rights, the collective does too. because a collective ultimately is made up of individuals. It's always individualism versus collectivism. Any argument between the left and the right, you can boil down to collectivism versus individualism. And every time individualism loses and collectivism wins, liberty, your God-given natural rights of liberty, lose. And remember, rights once lost rarely are returned. The good Lord gave us our rights. He gave us wise men that founded this country. They gave us a constitution. They gave us a country designed to be a country of real liberty and limited government. And now we've got people trying desperately to take that away, and people like you and I desperately trying to hold on to it and preserve it. Election Day 2010 is probably the most important election of our lifetime. Never has a choice been clearer. Never has the will of the American people been defied like it's been defied by the Obama administration, by the Pelosi and Reid-led Congress. Bill after bill rammed down our throats specifically against our will. And what does the right do, or what does the left do, excuse me? This is Reagan said. They demonize you. They attack you as uninformed or greedy because you want to keep more of the things that you earn. You are the people. We are the people. We're the power in this country. The Constitution says so. Liberals do not want that. Whether or not we retain our republic, not a democracy, a republic, as Franklin styled it, is up for grabs. That question is up for debate right now. That's how important November 2nd, 2010 is. There's never been a more important day in your life. There's never been a more important election in your life, because this election can begin to turn back the tide of creeping socialism and creeping Marxism that the left has been trying to inject this nation with for decades and decades and decades now. If you believe in your Constitution and your country, if you love the liberties the good Lord gave you, you know how to vote on November 2nd. And you know that the fight doesn't end November 2nd. No matter how resounding our victory may prove to be, the fight won't be won then. The fight will still be on. We'll have to make sure the people we elected, that their feet are held to the fire. We have to make sure they do the right thing, that they don't come down with bipartisanshipitis. We've got to understand the fight has only begun. As Churchill said in World War II, we'll fight them anywhere, basically. This is a political fight. We've got to fight it with the right candidates. We've got to hold their feet to the fire. And if they can't get it done, other candidates will step up, take their place, and they'll get the job done. We made a huge mistake in 2006 by handing the Senate and the House over to Democrats. We made an even bigger mistake by handing the White House and bigger majorities in the Houses in 2008 with the election of Barack Obama. We can turn back that tide. That starts November 2nd. 11-2-10 may be the most important numbers of your life and the most important numbers of this country's life. Do the right thing for your children, for yourselves, for the founders, for this country. Because the greatest hope of not just America, but the world, is a strong, liberty-loving, free America. This is Doug Hagan. Remember the Facebook page for Chimpsey Radio. Remember the words of Reagan. Remember my blog, thedelegator.wordpress.com. Remember all my podcasts and these shows available on delegator.podomatic.com. Go vote November 2nd. 11-2-10. Those numbers, maybe those most important numbers in the history of this great, great, great nation. Because the battle ensues. And how long this country remains great is going to be largely determined on what happens not only on November 2nd, but what happens going forward from that date. God bless America. God bless you, my friends. Thank you for listening so much. Now, let's start it on November 2nd, and let's keep it going afterwards. Goodbye. I'll talk to y'all next week.